something's going to happen to take you out, right? Like, if you're not getting hit by a bus, your body is going to betray you.
Oh my God. Hi, my name's Alyssa.
And my name is Bridget.
And you're listening to Money Feels,
the podcast where we take a break from talking about the finances of living and talk about the finances of dying.
Ah, yes. Where we discover who gets Aunt Betty's tea collection. Teapot collection.
The really important questions.
I know. I think that both of us really don't shy away from talking about death.
I love it.
I've done a ton of research. I've written so many articles about dying. At this point, it's just like second nature.
I know. I'm into it. Death isn't something that scares me per se. I would even say it's kind of like a point of interest. Maybe that's why I like Halloween so much. Maybe. I don't know. I'm into it. I like death.
Me too. Okay. Well, before we get into the nitty-gritty details of the Grim Reaper, how does your money feel today?
Pretty good. I mean, I don't know. I have a lot going on, so I'm a little bit like overwhelmed, and I got so overwhelmed that I'm just not like looking at anything. I'm kind of taking a week off from my money, I guess. So, okay. I think it's fine behind the scenes. I just needed a break.
It's like those celebrities who have an accountant and they just don't look at their money ever, and they don't know how much money they have. And someone else just deals with it for them. Like, can you imagine?
No, I can't. I feel like just taking a week not to look at it is different than never looking at it. I just needed a break. I'm just going to go back to managing my Aeroplan points and Marriott points for a bit and then come back to the money. What about you? How does your money feel today?
I'm honestly in the same boat. I haven't spent like anything. I did the no spend month in January and I'm just keeping it going because I'm doing way better with controlling my unnecessary spend. And so much so to the point that I don't even crave takeout coffee anymore, which is like a shock in itself.
I think maybe you're just getting older because I'm at that phase too. Like, coffee's just too strong. I can only have one a day.
Oh, I'm still having three, but I just prefer to make my own.
Those days are numbered. I don't know.
Okay, well, let's get into talking about death and maybe just dealing with the discomfort, because for some people listening, they might be like, you are weird.
I think a lot of people feel discomfort around talking about death. I actually think we're the weirdos. And I see this all the time, even when I've brought it up on Instagram, because again, I like to talk about death and talk about planning for the end of life financially and otherwise. And without fail, I get so many DMs where people are like, no, like you can just eat better and exercise and you'll live longer. And like people just really don't want to grapple with their own mortality and the end of life. Like, I think it's very scary because we don't know what happens after death. And it is way easier to kind of ignore it and just focus on living your life, which is how, like, I think that makes sense in a lot of friends. But I actually think that you can live a fuller life by acknowledging that it will end at some point and that that end will be largely out of your control.
I think that for me, most of the people in my life work in healthcare. So they're just very realistic and logical about death and talk about it very bluntly in front of me. So it's normal for me. Like, when I was 21 years old, my best friend asked me if I could be her personal health care directive.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, what the hell is that? And she was explaining it to me because as a nurse, you have to choose that. When you're working in the healthcare industry, you have to assign someone to that.
Oh, apparently. I didn't know that. Okay.
She told me. But she was just like, you know, I just don't want to ever be a vegetable. And I know you're the only one that would follow through with doing what I want.
Yeah, that's so interesting. You know, that's very common for health professionals, is they tend to be more decisive and pragmatic about their deaths than like common people, because I think they have a better degree of acceptance. Like, they understand what happens when your body dies. They understand what treatments will work and to what extent. And they just make, I think, more humane choices for themselves than the average person that just thinks like staying alive at all costs is the most important things, even if your quality of life can be greatly diminished.
Yeah, that's true. It's like when you have the scientific lens, it's easier to see it for what it is.
Yeah. And I think about that a lot because I've had people close to me die at all ages. So I feel like I've seen death at different stages of life. And I don't know, like I feel very pragmatic about it because I don't know, I kind of like take a little bit of comfort in something that big being out of my control and the opportunities that it is to make some of those aspects in your control and making a medical directive or even thinking about like when you think your quality of life will really diminish in old age, I think is a way of taking control over something that is so scary and unknown. Obviously, it doesn't remove the risks of like an unexpected terminal illness or a catastrophic accident, but it can give you peace to live more intentionally in the meantime.
Yeah, I think one time Nick told me the best way to get through to someone who is like not able to take a topic seriously is you either relate to the concept of childhood or the end of their life. Because if they're not close to either, like they're somewhere in the middle, so where we're at right now, your best bet is to focus on the people closest to them. So it's mm-hmm. like one question I always consider is if you vanished off the face of the earth tomorrow and were to think about all of the people in your life, would they be okay financially? Mm-hmm. Would they need time off work? Would they be able to support themselves and the other people in their lives without you in theirs? I think those are the only questions that can start to help you think about a plan that doesn't involve you.
Yeah. And the solution to that is life insurance, as we know.
Oh, yes. That's an easy
just,
one.
Just in case anyone was like, what is the answer to that? Just get a good life insurance policy, a good term life insurance policy, and you'll be set.
Exactly. And obviously, we'll talk a little bit more about estate plans. But one thing I wanted to ask you about is, have you ever heard of death dinners?
I have not.
I feel like you would find these interesting. It's like a gathering where you get your friends and your family together and you discuss your estate plan and life after the passing of a loved one. Uh-huh. And you kind of just focus on the distribution of your belongings, but with everyone when you're alive.
Oh, so not just like writing it down in a secret will and then it's a surprise that gets revealed after you die. It's like, you're like, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's just helping you kind of come to accept things. Like when you have to address the subject, it can actually reduce your anxiety.
100%.
And there are psychological benefits to it. One psychologist said that if you pass down cherished items, it can lessen the fear of death.
Oh, interesting.
And also, if you discuss death, it can help enhance your sense of humor. So people who like to talk about death are funnier.
I knew that about me.
And then also just help you connect with other people. And so there's like one website that's called deathoverdinner.org, and they have like materials for you to host a death dinner.
I love it. This is amazing. You'd have to do one like every 5 or 10 years just to keep everyone updated as your circumstances change. Because that's the other thing. Maybe I'm a little bit scarred by this, that I have known people that have died quite young, like in their 20s or 30s. And we really just take for granted that death is this far off thing. When we're young, we think it can't happen to us. And then when it does happen to you, like you have to grapple with your end of life so soon before you've gotten to experience so many things. And I think that's really hard to do, but we can't think of like just putting it off and being like, oh, I'll think about that in my 60s or 70s. Like, unfortunately, you might be diagnosed with an illness very young. And it's nice to have some things in place, or if an accident were to happen, to have that already taken care of for your family, because we're not immortal. It feels mm-hmm. like we are when we're in our 20s, 30s, and 40s, but you're not. And there's so many things out there that like it just could happen. And it's just sheer bad luck when it does. And there's nothing you can do to stop it. And the only strength really is to lean into it and prepare as best as you can. And you do that before it happens to you.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if you probably have an estate plan with like an actual lawyer's office. Or did you do yours through
I have to get a new one. I used Willful, but now I think my situation's like just a little bit more complicated with my business. And so I have to update it to something different. But I think Willful is a great tool. My friend and fellow entrepreneur, Erin Burry, made that company. Like, I guess she's probably had it for nearly 10 years now.
Yeah, her and her husband have been running that for years.
Yeah, it's so awesome. And you can very quickly make a legal will online. It's super easy to do. Then you register your will and it's in effect as soon as you're done.
Yeah, and I still have mine through Willful. I do think it's for, a less complex situation, but it works for me right now. And I've talked to a lot of people who I've recommended the software to that are like, I'm just really struggling to actually sit down and go through it, because you do have to like consider what you want for yourself after you pass and what you want for the people in your life, which is not something that we just do every single day. So when you have to sit down and put it into like type into your computer what sort of funeral you want or who's going to be your executor, it's hard for some people. And I finished mine in 30 minutes.
You just breeze through it. You're like, this is easier than making a grocery list.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of things that you need when you're completing that estate plan or will. You need, like, you need to know who you want to be your executor, who you want to be your power of attorney, which is the person that's responsible for all your financial assets. Who's going to be that personal directive that decides what happens if you can't make decisions for yourself?
I mean, planning these things, though, is like the last and most selfless act of your entire life. Because in reality, you're not going to care what happens because you'll be dead. It actually doesn't matter to you what happens to anything that you had or owned when you were alive, because it's over for you. But what you're trying to do is, how do I make the loss of me easy on the people I love?
Exactly. And I interviewed like a ton of lawyers at one point asking them all of those questions. And 99% of them recommended that you create essentially an estate binder for people to have access to everything. Because you've heard those horror stories of someone passing away and no one can find their estate plan and no one knows where any of their documents are.
And can't like log into their Instagram and deactivate it.
Yeah, that's the other thing too, is that these days, we just really forget to consider digital assets.
Yeah.
Like your Instagram and your Facebook accounts. You can assign someone to be the beneficiary of that account. You can give, like, you need to have a place where people know how to access your email accounts.
Yeah.
What about your loyalty points? Like your Aeroplan miles? Like, who's going to take those?
I don't know what happens to those when you die. I don't know if you can like bequeath Aeroplan points.
Most people do have an option now. Most of these apps and softwares are coming up with options and solutions for these cases, because in some situations, it could be a ton of money that's left on the line for someone else. So like your crypto assets, your digital photos, like a lot of us don't print photos out anymore. And so you're thinking like, all of my pictures are saved on Facebook. If those just get lost and no one has access to them, it becomes really sad for the people left.
Yeah, I don't like, am I dark with I'm thinking? I'm like, in two generations of your own family, people are going to forget who you are. Like, we are not immortal. Our lives and our legacy is not as important as we think it is. That's just us. That's our ego. Like, obviously, you're the most important to you and your life is the most important thing that's ever happened to you. But it's not like that outside of it. And yeah, it's sad if you die and all your photos are stuck on Facebook. But no, like, no one's actually going to care in a few years, unfortunately. Like, the number of people that are really going to be greatly impacted by our deaths is a very, very small handful. And it's your family and friends that are closest to you. And you want to organize things to take care of them. But you also have to have this approach that, like, we're just little beings on a rock in space. And it, like, a lot of the things don't have a tremendous impact in the long term. I don't know if that's like dark or fatalistic, but I guess I just don't think I'm that important in the grand scheme of the universe. And as much as I like to plan things and organize and take care of my family, I'm also like, my great-grandchildren will have like no idea that I even existed or what I looked like or what I cared about or what was important to me. Like, we, again, this is where I think people get really hung up on legacy and passing down heirlooms and generational wealth, because again, we're just so afraid of death that we're looking for any way to be immortal. And I just feel like I'm not immortal. I'm going to die and I'll be largely irrelevant and the world's just going to move on without me. And that's okay. I'm going to do my best to organize things for my daughter and other people I love. But like, even if I drop the ball, it's not going to matter.
Oh yeah, 100%. I think like balance. I agree with what you're saying in some respects, but in others, I'm like, if you passed away tomorrow, your children would want access to parts of you that they never got 100%. A chance to meet. So I do feel like there is some sort of obligation personally, just as just me, to give those memories to the people who do want them. It's not going to be everyone in your life and you're not going to be immortalized.
Yeah.
But some people will want those things if you were to pass away.
Do you ever, I think this because I think about death because I'm a weirdo, but don't you think it's cool that if anything were to happen to us, our kids would like be able to listen to the podcast and really get to know us through it? And that would be so fun for them.
Yes, I think about that all the time. And one thing that Nick and I have actually set up is an email account for the kids.
Oh, cute.
And we write them a letter, like each of us write them a letter on every birthday. And when they're 18, we'll give them the password.
Yeah.
And they can log in and go back and read all of the letters of the memories that we've made.
That's so sweet. So yeah, I think this is why like end of life planning is really important, because it's most important for the person who loves you the most or the people who love you the most. That's who you're really doing the work for, because yeah, you're not immortal and everything you've bought or owned or done in your life will become largely irrelevant immediately after you die, except to the people who care the most about you. And planning your end of life is a gift that you give them.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're doing them a disservice if you don't organize it in some capacity, which means that yes, you do have to sit with that discomfort and be curious about your feelings about death, because I think those are questions that you need to ask. And also, it's like okay to grieve that experience now.
I love that we're both just struggling so hard to try to imagine what it's like to experience discomfort about death. We're like, what do we think other people would feel on this topic?
I think what's so weird for me is because I'm so anxious, you would think that this lack of control would send me into a spiral.
Yeah.
But I think it's because I've had so many people in my life pass away from a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've just been kind of pushed into understanding death from childhood. And I've surrounded myself with people who are similar. So maybe that's it, because I am anxious, but I don't really think about death. More upsetting to me is thinking about other people dying, not me.
Oh, 100%. I'm with you there.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about like what it costs to die, because that is a lot. It's not our opinion. These are just the things that you'll have to pay for.
Math.
Not you, because you'll be dead, but these are the things that will have to be paid for.
Yeah, you have no worries anymore. Just think of that. You're experiencing financial stress now. It goes away. Perks of death.
Yes, exactly. So when you die, there are two types of taxes that your estate will face. One is your final income tax return, because you cannot escape the CRA even in death. It is called a terminal return. It's not going to the airport, but it's terminal. And see, the sense of humor just
it's so
comes
funny.
Out when you're talking about this stuff.
It is actually funny, though, that when you die, the CR is like, we still need our cut.
Exactly. Like, how gross. Anyways, and the second one is probate fees. And these vary based on the province that you live in. They're charged for the court's validation of a deceased person's will and estate plan.
Okay.
So this is like the last step that has to happen before you can actually execute your last wishes.
Okay. Is it expensive?
It depends on which province you're in.
Okay.
And I believe it might be based on your income. I can't remember, probably. So don't quote
or
me on
the size
that.
Of your estate.
Yes, exactly. But if you don't have a will or if your will is incomplete, then it becomes way more lengthy to actually like release the assets, and it's more expensive. But if you use like a notary or a lawyer or an online estate platform like Willful, then you can alleviate those costs.
Okay.
And then for the final tax return, it needs to be filed in the calendar year of your death. So no grieving.
Just file
quickly
your
return your return those funds. And that actually includes the market value of your retirement accounts, your stock portfolios, your bonds, real estate investments.
This is why we die with zero. You don't want to leave a big gift to the CRA. You want to enjoy your money while you're alive.
Exactly. And so like, your death means that the ownership of these assets must change. And so anytime the change in ownership happens, the asset, it's the equivalent of selling the assets.
Yes. They just take the market value.
Yeah. So what do you say to people about that?
Ideally, and we did a whole episode on Die with Zero. So if you haven't heard that one, my dog is, she's doing some grief cries in the background. We did a whole episode on Die with Zero, which is one of my favorite books. And it's just a great concept of trying to use your money when you die, which I think is very difficult. Use your money before you die, which I think is very difficult for people who are financially focused, because we tend to really zero in on accumulating money and then have a hard time decumulating. And again, because we're so uncomfortable with our own mortality, our own death, we don't seem to understand that we are going to die. And so there is no reason to hold on to that money. And ideally, like, no one knows the exact date that they'll die, but you can make an estimate. And no matter how much you exercise or eat well or stay out of the sun or take your vitamins, like maybe that'll buy you a few extra years. But I looked up these stats recently for my Instagram stories, and like 70% of people are going to die before age 90. Right. So most people, you're going to die in your late 70s or your 80s. And that's true. About 30% of you are going to live past 90. But I mean, a bunch of you are going to die, like 91. 92. We're not talking, like, not everyone's live until 106. Like, everyone's so worried that they're going to need long-term care for 20 years. And the statistics on that are actually readily available. Most people who enter a long-term care facility, it is for end of life, and you'll be in there for 5 years or less. So that can help you plan. And this crossed my mind like about a week ago, which was very timely for this discussion. But I actually thought about, I'm like, how much money do I really need to die on? Because that's what retirement savings is. We tend to think of it as money to live on in retirement, but it's actually money to die on. And I was thinking about it, and I'm like, well, if I'm probably going to die in my 80s, maybe I only need to have like $500,000 to $750,000 left in my retirement accounts at my 80th birthday. And I'm like, if I need that much at 80, then, well, I'll probably need about twice that at age 70. And then you're like, 70 is only like 5 years after retirement at 65. And you're like, oh, shoot. And when you kind of work backwards that way, you can figure out like, when is appropriate to spend my money and start getting rid of it, so I don't die with this massive multi-million dollar estate where one third or 50% goes to the CRA, or at least that's how I thought about it. So estimate your death and then work backwards for how much money you need and try to die with as little as possible.
Yeah. And it sounds like that seems easy, but it's really hard to spend your money once you're in retirement, because there is this fear of what if.
And yeah, everyone's like afraid of running out of money, and no one's afraid of like running out of life. Like, again, we're just so scared of dying. We're like, obviously I'm the exception and I'm going to live forever and my money will run out of it. I just like go through life where I'm like, I'm not the exception. I'm going to live a very normal life. Like, I did one of those life expectancy calculators, and it's like, you're going to die at 88. And I'm like, okay, That's me. I just assume I'm textbook.
That's even really long. Like, that makes me uncomfortable. I get more uncomfortable the older I see myself.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I'm hoping that I can choose my death before then, and we can talk a little bit more about that. But that's the other thing that I think is really hard about planning your end of life, is we tend to project our current selves into the future, whereas the physical decline, especially like the mental decline, can be severe too, but the physical decline that happens after age 70 is so severe. Yeah. And you can do all you can to fight against it, but like,
it will happen.
It's going to happen. Like, I don't know what to tell. This is what people were getting up in my DMs about. Like, one person got so upset, I actually had to like block them because they were just fanatical that I was saying, like, you're going to die. Your physical health is going to decline really rapidly, and then you're going to die. And it doesn't matter where you live. It doesn't matter what you eat. It doesn't matter how often you exercise. Your chances of having like a catastrophic medical event, like a heart attack or a stroke or cancer in your 70s is like 1 in 3.
Oh my God. That's high.
But it's the end of your life. Like, something's going to happen to take you out, right? Like, if you're not getting hit by a bus, your body is going to betray you.
Oh my God. Bridget.
I'm sorry. Was that too much?
No, that was not enough, honestly.
I'm sorry, everyone, but like, you have to stare death in the face and plan accordingly, because this is how it works. It
comes back with just stare death in the face. Like, that's like the... Okay, anyways. That's so funny. Okay, so
did I ruin the episode?
No, absolutely not. I think you just made it. But the one thing that we haven't talked about yet is funeral costs.
That, like, I just don't think they're that expensive in the grand scheme of things, right? Isn't it like, it's like $5,000 to $10,000 for a funeral?
Most places. Now it ranges from $8,000 to $9,000 on average. Okay. Obviously, it's going to go up a little bit, right? Everything does.
Inflation will get you even when you're dead.
It also depends on the province and the city you live in. Like, Ontario is much more expensive. And then there's like, I feel like we could do a full episode on like the funeral system and how much they charge people for these things, but they like charge additional money for a winter burial, which is more expensive.
Well, they got to dig through the ice, Alyssa. That makes sense to me. That's just practical.
But there's a lot of different funeral costs depending on what you want. Like, you can have a funeral home, you can have a church ceremony, you could need flowers, a reception, cemetery costs. No, you're not going to be there, but some people really do focus on this as their last sort of hurrah. It's their going away party.
This is like, did you watch the most recent season of The Crown?
I've never seen it.
Oh, there was funeral planning in there. Oh. And it was like, I think planning your own funeral can be a way of psychologically and emotionally processing your grief at the end of your own life. So I think that's fine. I do want to like chirp in here with something that's really interesting that I learned a few months ago on a podcast. I listened to the BBC, The Climate Question, and they talked about having a green death because apparently it's not super environmentally sound to like have a big funeral production or cremate people and things like that. So I'm very now on board with having a green natural burial where they'll just essentially like wrap you in a shroud and put you in the ground so you decompose more quickly. I know it's super great conversation on this podcast, but I think that's worth thinking about, because previously I was very on board with cremation because it just seemed more efficient, leaves like very little behind, but that's terrible for the environment. So
I'm really curious about that, because like now they have alternatives like tree burials and ocean burials where like you still are cremated, but you are in a biodegradable shell and you are planted and grown as a tree.
Well, doesn't cremation mean that they just burn you?
Yeah. So like,
if they're burning you, they're releasing CO2.
So then is this tree burial greenwashing?
probably from the sounds of it. If they're still doing the fire part, it's bad for the environment.
Right. I was confused, and then I looked more into it because that's the option I had selected originally in my estate plan was the tree burial. And then we had had a conversation in the past about cremation not being environmentally friendly.
Yeah, it's so bad. And
I realized that that is still part of the process. They just wrap you in a biodegradable shell, which is like,
that's
great, but also doesn't resolve the initial problem.
Yeah, now I'm just mad.
That's yeah, bad. So I guess if you want to go green.
Die green.
When you're in the black, you can you really have to do your research.
Yeah. And a green death is like the last thing you can do for the planet when you're leaving. Like, leave on a high note. Choose the shroud in the ground.
And I think that's another piece of the psychological element that can be super helpful too, is like, you want to leave the world a better place than you found it. That's most people's goals when they pass. And so if your funeral is important to you, then yeah, consider the ways that you can do it to help the climate, not harm. But yeah, there's a ton of options too. If you're in a place with financial hardship, like maybe you are taking care of someone else's funeral that didn't leave a lot of financial support, you can use like savings and pensions. There's also government assistance in really severe cases, but obviously like look for the most affordable options for the people you love too.
Yeah. The most affordable green options.
Have you thought about your funeral? I'm curious.
No, like nothing except for the shroud in the ground. I don't care. I'm not going to be at that party. So I don't care what anyone does at the funeral.
But you like throw good parties. Don't you want your last one to be?
Not if I'm not there.
You're like, I'm not spending money on a party I can't go to.
I don't even think about the money. I mean, if someone needs me to plan it because they don't want to do the work of it, but it's not important. It's not important to me. Funerals are for the living, right? It's to give them a chance to gather and like remember the dead. And it's, yeah, I guess I haven't thought about it really. It's not important to me.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, you can give a little bit of guidance, but the people who know you too would know what you want. And it's more about how they're going to best grieve.
Exactly. Yeah. Because when you say they'll know what you want, it's like, she didn't want anything. So we can just YOLO, whatever. Like, I don't know, wrap me in a Louis Vuitton coffin for the show. And then
some of my favorite TikTok videos are when people are talking about the people they don't want at their funerals. Like, they have a list on their phone and they're walking through it. It's like, you have to show a text within, like, from us talking within the last year to be allowed entrance to my funeral.
Oh, like, anyone can come to mine. If they're, even if it's someone I don't like, I'm like, talk about living rent-free in someone's head. I bet there's people that would come to my funeral to be like, I just want to make sure she's dead.
You're like, open door policy.
I'm not going to keep anyone out. Like, I lived a good life. Outliving me isn't a win. You're just stuck on this burning planet for longer.
Oh my God, Bridget, you're so dark today.
I don't know. It's just not a...
It's just coming out of you.
No, this is just not a thing that like bothers me, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Like, I have thought about my funeral, but I can't think of anything other than like, I really like this song. Maybe that would be nice.
Oh, like you even picked music for it? Like, as long as there's nice flowers at mine, I just don't get grocery store flowers. That's all. Well,
see, I don't even like flowers. Oh. So yeah, I just think people know. People who would be hosting your funeral know best too. So it's another one of those things where you have to let go of control, and maybe that would be difficult for some people.
Yeah, I already accept that I'm not in control of my life, so it doesn't bother me to not be in control of my death.
Well, that's actually a really good transition into talking about medical assistance in dying and choice.
MAID. I love MAID.
So MAID is a process where certain individuals can receive help from a medical practitioner, so a doctor or a nurse practitioner, to end their life. Mm-hmm. And what do we think about this?
I love it. I know some people are against it, and that's maybe going to be a controversial take, in which case I don't care because MAID is great. And my grandfather actually used MAID And it was a wonderful option for him. Like, he was just done. He had had enough of life. It was actually a very beautiful way to go, because often when people die, it's very like unexpected and jarring. It was actually really nice to like know when it was going to happen, to be able to say our goodbyes, to have a conversation with him. He then like cracked a beer before he went. And it was, I think it was just one of the most beautiful things for me to witness, to have those moments and to see someone be in control of such a significant life experience, the last life experience that you get to have. And I really like firmly believe in MAID. And I honestly, after I turn 50, if it's not rolled out in a more accessible way, I'm going to devote a ton of time advocating for it. Because as I've mentioned on this podcast multiple times, like Alzheimer's runs on like both sides of my family. It's very severe. And I'm very worried that my brain's just not going to function like starting in my 70s even. And I want to be able to choose my death before I have a demise that is just so undignified as losing your memory and then losing your ability, your mobility, and just living a good quality of life. So I'm super pro MAID. And so if I'm diagnosed with Alzheimer's and it's not available here, I'm just going to Dignitas in Switzerland. If you go there, they're way more generous. So if you can afford to go to Switzerland, you can afford to die on your own terms.
Interesting. I actually just wanted to share like what the strict conditions and outlines they have in Canada so that people know, because a lot of people might not know. So for one thing, you have to be eligible for health services in Canada. Mm-hmm. You have to be at least 18 years old and mentally competent to make healthcare decisions.
That's why you can't do it with Alzheimer's.
Yeah. You have to have a grievous and irremediable medical condition. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I can't say that word. I'm not doing well with words today.
You're doing great.
Which includes severe and incurable illness, disease, or disability, an advanced state of decline, and unbearable physical or mental suffering. Mm-hmm. You have voluntary requests without external pressure and informed consent. And this is not exclusive to terminal or fatal conditions. So mental illness alone does not qualify. Yeah. But they are looking at pursuing that as a qualifier.
Yes. I don't want to get into that because I'm afraid of the wrath of the
internet. I mean, I'll touch on like why people do and maybe not like it. I think there's like a lot of questions about autonomy and mm-hmm. compassion when it comes to MAID, because it argues that true autonomy involves making an informed decision or an informed choice, which is compromised if you are marginalized and you don't have adequate social supports that could potentially help alleviate any sort of illness-related suffering.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. Another interesting part too, which I just read about last month, and I actually shared the article in my newsletter, was talking about this one pro-MAID lobbyist group called Dying with Dignity. Mm-hmm. And they present themselves as advocating for patients' right to qualify for this end-of-life care. But some people worry about the organization's influence on the MAID policy and perhaps think that they're overshadowing voices of palliative care workers and disability activists. And so while this group, Dying with Dignity, is pushing for further expansions of MAID, including to have like minors and possibly the mental illness alone mm-hmm. have the choice, a lot of people are pushing back against what they're advocating for.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's like the people pushing back make good points, because this was in the news before, because the housing crisis has become so severe in Canada that people can't afford to live here. And there were stories where people were like trying to access MAID because they can't afford to be alive anymore. And that's very dark. And obviously, I don't agree with it. I would just rather we have good social supports than that. But I do think some of the pushback against MAID is again, people are so uncomfortable with death and dying. And we have this weird obsession with the natural course of life because we seem to think that natural is better, but nature is often super brutal. Like dying from a terminal illness can be really painful and awful to go through if you let it take its course. And sometimes it's better to just bow out early because nature doesn't actually care about what's going to be most comfortable for you. And again, I've had family members at end of life right now, and it's extremely painful and harrowing on all your loved ones to watch you in such severe decline and be absolutely powerless. And know, like, my grandmother's in this position now. Like, I know she wouldn't want to be in the condition that she's in now. And there's nothing we can do. And it's horrible to witness as a family member. I'm sure, like, it's not a good experience for her, but we're so obsessed with letting nature take its course and death happen naturally that I don't know. I don't have words for it. It's just one of the most traumatic experiences of my life, to be honest. And there's a great book on this that I read a while ago called Death Interrupted by, what was his name? Blair Bigham. He's a Canadian. He was on a few podcasts too, so you can listen to him speak more, or you can get the book. But he talks about how, like, medical technology has become so advanced that we can essentially, like, keep your body alive indefinitely for the most part. And he's really asking the question, like, is this a good idea? Like, just because we have machines that can pump your heart and work your lungs and make your blood and kidneys work, like, is this always the best choice just because we can medically do it? And we are, even, I was talking about nature taking its course, but we are also artificially keeping people alive beyond nature because we have the machines to do it. And your quality of life can be so diminished that it's not worth it. So I think, like, MAID is a really powerful way to get, just acknowledge your mortality and know when to tap out. Be like, I've had enough. Life was good and I'm out.
Yeah, I think everything you said makes so much sense. And it is just giving the choice. I think that's the bottom line of MAID is like, you want there to be a choice. I understand that there needs to be, like, certain conditions to make sure that the reasons you're doing it are for you and make sense. But yeah, it is, like, it's another one of those systemic issues. Like, at the core of everything, a lot of it has to do with the systems that exist.
Yeah. This is just another my body, my choice argument.
Pretty much. Yeah, I think so.
So the other point that I want to bring up with when you're pondering your own death is the most powerful thing about it, like, planning financially and otherwise, is not just to, like, plan your death and how you're going to exit the world, but how you're going to live before that. Because I think really acknowledging what is the natural human lifespan, and maybe yours is slightly longer because long life runs in your family. Your grandma's 96. You get till 96. That's good. Good for you. But just acknowledging, like, that you will eventually die. Your decline after age 70 or after 75, you exercise and eat well, is going to be severe and rapid. And how do you want to live in the years before that? Because that decline is going to happen so rapidly on the heels of retirement. If you retire at 65.
Yeah, it's not very long.
Yeah, you're going to have, like, 5 or 10 really good years. And then, like, stuff's going to start breaking: hip replacements, allergies, asthma, cancer diagnoses, all of that's going to hit you all at once. So in the context of, like, thinking about your death and planning your death, like, plan your life. What experiences do you really want to have that can only be had when you're young and fit and healthy and mobile? And should you spend your money more on those experiences now rather than trying to save this big nest egg for the uncertainty of, like, whether or not you'll live till 90? And I think, like, thinking about my death in this capacity, and especially expecting Alzheimer's in my 70s or 80s, it changes how I live right now, because I'm like, okay, this time is limited. This health is limited, and I want to be able to use it to its full capacity, because it's going to run out. And I think you can live, again, a much fuller and richer life just acknowledging that.
Yeah, I think that the two go hand in hand. And I think that's maybe why a lot of people struggle to zoom out and plan their future, is because they stop once it starts to reach that ending near like the last phase of your life. Yeah. Because when you do actually sit down and think about the things that you want, and you don't consider you in 10 or 20 years from now, you're kind of doing yourself a disservice.
A huge disservice. I'm like still reeling, even though I know it mentally, I'm still like reeling of what it's like to be 75 and retiring at 65. Like those are just 10 years apart. And it's like your retirement's not going to be this really like glamorous time of rest and hobbies and traveling. Like there's a lot that you should front load much earlier in your life, because it's just not going to turn out the way you think. And the time's not guaranteed. I mean, I think that's the other point that I want to drive home here, is like the people that I've lost, and especially those that are young. I shared that one TikToker recently who was diagnosed with ALS, I think at like 29, which is a terminal illness with a severe decline. And her videos are great, and watching her try to live her life to the fullest, even as it's ending and she's becoming progressively more disabled through the disease. Like, it is a blessing to look at your life as a short time that you're here, and you have to live really intentionally, because you don't know when you're going to pass away. Like, I think it's lovely that we're all planning to die at 85 or 88 or 90, but you also have to grapple with like, what if I am diagnosed with cancer next year? Or what if my partner is? Like, what if I lose someone close to me? Have we prepared enough for that? And like, am I living the life that I want to live right now if something like that were to happen, instead of just putting everything off until 65 and retirement? Because those years really aren't guaranteed. It's great to save for them, but you're not guaranteed to have them.
I think that might be why bigger financial decisions feel easier to me.
What do you mean?
I think like when it comes to me going back to school, or like buying the house we bought, or anything that's been like a significant purchase, has felt really easy. And I think it's because I just know that it's like, it's now, mm-hmm. or it might not happen. And so I just have to take this opportunity when it comes.
I love that.
And yeah. So I think like, if you're a person who really struggles to make decisions for yourself and your money, it might be a question of whether you are comfortable in your own mortality.
Yes, 100%. Because I do think sometimes I'm like, what decisions would I make if I only got to live 5 more years or 10 more years, which is very, very short. But I don't know. I've had so much experience with that with people close to me. And it does help you focus on what's going on now. And I just try to enjoy every day, because it's not guaranteed. And the blessing of enjoying every day is, if you're going to live another 40 or 50 years, then you just have like 50 years of enjoying every day, which is also excellent.
Yeah. And like, I know we really don't want to listen to older generations when they're talking to us, but I think this is the one area that you could genuinely be hearing what your elders are saying to you when they say like, I regret that I worked as much as I did, or yeah. I regret that I didn't spend as much time with you as I wanted to. Those are things that are actually going to happen if you don't take control of what you're doing today.
Yeah, it's so important. Like, all we really have is today. But save as if you have 50 years.
Yes, exactly. There has to be a balance. Thank you for listening to today's episode of Money Feels. You can subscribe to our podcast anywhere you listen, and join over 300 other friends on our Patreon for more juicy content. If you want to support us for free, you can leave a review, and we'll see you next time.
You can follow us on Instagram at Mixed Up Money for Alyssa, at Bridgie Casey for me, and at Money Feels Podcast. And we'll see you next time.